Hello and welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast. With chronic obstructive pulmonary disease being cited as the third leading cause of mortality globally, the data surrounding the condition has naturally continued to broaden in recent decades. COPD has caused an estimated 3.23 million deaths in 2019 and is typically associated with smoking and tobacco exposure. However, people in low and middle income countries are often predisposed to a multitude of environmental factors that are not often considered outside of high income settings. Intrauterine micronutrient deficiencies, uncontrolled asthma, and exposure to biomass and environmental pollutants have all been observed in these settings, and diagnostic tools such as spirometry are often scarce. Dr. Trishul Siddharthan spoke of the prevalence of COPD in low and middle income settings and offered insights on a recent study that brought three distinct COPD screening tools to settings including Nepal, Peru, and Uganda. Let's tune into that conversation now. I feel like there's no better place to start this conversation by talking about how COPD affects low and middle income countries and how the prevalence of that disease in these areas informed your decision to screen for COPD in areas in Nepal, Peru, and Uganda.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, that's an excellent question. And so, in order to understand that, you really have to sort of either understand what COPD is and sort of how you diagnose COPD. And so COPD is a disease of the small airways, usually a result of an environmental risk factor, including tobacco smoke, biomass smoke, that results in a chronic and oftentimes progressive process. Clinical findings of COPD are shortness of breath, cough, and occasionally some wheeze as well. Most of the studies related to COPD have occurred in high-income settings. And if you can imagine, over the past 20 to 30 years, these are going to be drug trials as well as large epidemiologic studies. The real problem with COPD is the way we diagnose it. And so it requires an individual to breathe into a spirometer. And so it's sometimes on a handheld device, sometimes an office-based device. You take a deep breath in and you breathe out as fast and as hard as you can. And while the procedure itself isn't complicated, the device itself, as well as the individual has to interpret the test, as well as the individual that has to coach the patient to do the test, it is specialized. And so these devices can range in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds to thousands of dollars. And the individuals that perform the test are usually a respiratory therapist, and usually a pulmonologist reads the spirometry measurements. And so that is largely unavailable in low and middle income country settings. The BOLD trial, which was conducted, I believe, early 2000s, was one of the first studies that looked at the prevalence across settings. They found prevalence rates up to 25% in areas of South Africa. This disease is highly prevalent in certain regions of the world, and is largely undiagnosed and as a result, largely untreated.
And I'm sure that prevalence has to do with, like you mentioned, some of the environmental factors. I know in the study you mentioned in high income areas, most of the exposure comes down to, you know, cigarette smoking. But could you talk about some of the environmental exposures in these low and middle income countries and how they might differ?
Absolutely. And when we have to think about exposures, you know, we traditionally think about cigarette exposures, but exposure occurs over the course of the lifetime. And so there's a really robust data supporting a range of exposures across the lifetime that are pertinent to low and middle income settings. So intrauterine, your lungs develop even prior to the birth in the fetal buds and the fetal stages. And so intrauterine micronutrient deficiencies, and so vitamin A deficiencies have been demonstrated in Nepal to result in reduced lung volume at birth. In birth, after birth, in childhood, uncontrolled asthma, recurrent pulmonary infections, exposure to cigarettes, and in some cases, exposure to environmental pollutants such as traffic and biomass have been sort of demonstrated to be associated with decreased lung function. Your lungs continue to grow up until the age of your 20s when you sort of have a progressive decline thereafter. Things like tobacco smoke, biomass fuel, as well as recurrent pulmonary infections like tuberculosis can cause that to accelerate it. So when we think about exposures, it really occurs from inception all the way up until death. And all of these individual factors can relate and result in COPD. Low income settings, as you know, when you think about the risk factors that I mentioned, are particularly individuals in these settings are particularly predisposed to a number of these risk factors.
I was wondering if maybe you could detail the three screening tools that you took to Nepal, Peru, and Uganda.
Yeah, and so screening has been a focus of interest for respiratory physicians now for a while. And so, as we mentioned, you know, COPD affects over 300 million individuals, and it's the third leading cause of death. And so identifying individuals early and starting them on treatment has been of huge interest to the respiratory community. The three tests we looked at were the modified lung function questionnaire, which is a set of a questionnaire related to symptoms and other risk factors. Capture, which was a questionnaire combined with peak expiratory flow that was validated in high income settings. And then the low COLA questionnaire, COPD in low and middle income settings questionnaire, which combined both a screening questionnaire with pertinent exposure such as biomass, as well as peak expiratory flow. And so the questionnaires and the delivery of these questionnaires are going to be similar, though the questions that each instrument contains are a little different, and the approach to peak expiratory flow is a little different as well.
The study featured a total of, I think, a little over 10,000 adults, 35% who ever smoked in their lives, and 30% who were exposed to biomass smoke. Something I thought that was particularly interesting is that 95.3%, if I'm thinking correctly, of participants with COPD were unaware of the diagnosis prior to this. So how does that speak to the efficacy of these screening tools as well as the limitations in care in these areas?
Yeah, and so when thinking about a screening tool, there's two important components to look at, right? And so when the screening tool comes back, you know, how likely is it to tell you whether or not you have a disease or whether or not you're at risk for having a disease on follow-up testing? The other contrary point of this, and what's very important in low and middle income settings, to what extent is are there false positives, right? And so if we say, you know, a screening test will work 100% of the time if all the people you screen have COPD or you say they have COPD. But the problem is it'll result in a lot of people that require spirometry who may not have COPD. And so it's the trade-off or the balance between how sensitive and how specific the instrument is. And so we wanted to find an instrument that was able to detect a disease and, more importantly, symptomatic disease, because we don't necessarily, not all individuals with COPD are on inhalers or on therapy. And so an instrument that will identify symptomatic disease, but doesn't necessarily result in a lot of referrals for spirometry, which have downstream cost implications to the systems. And so we needed a questionnaire that was relevant to the prevalence of disease at these sites, a questionnaire that was relevant to the exposures and risk factors at these sites, as well as a questionnaire that was easy to administer. And when we look at sort of the results of the findings, the questionnaires really operated similarly. But the question and the follow-up to this is, to what extent does this result in false positives or inadvertent individuals assent for screening into the health system? And so, you know, the follow-up and the real limitations of the study is looking at dissemination or implementation of this within the existing health systems.
Thank you for that. That actually kind of led into my last question, which was kind of broad, is where would you like to see this go? I know that at the end of your study, you recommended that further research be conducted to see if this actually improves clinical outcomes. But I think you were kind of speaking to that just a few seconds ago.
Yeah, and that really is a big question, both in high and low and middle income settings. You know, while you could have a screening tool that performs well, to what extent is it utilized, and to what extent does it improve the outcomes for individuals that are at risk for COPD? And that has yet to be actually answered here in the United States as well as overseas. There's a study here in the U.S. where they're looking at implementation in primary care settings of the capture questionnaire with peak expiratory flow. And, you know, our hope is that we'll be able to do something similar in low and middle income settings to better assess how these items function and to what extent they sort of burden the system or result in cost benefit. Ultimately, with many of these tests, we are interested in what is the cost benefit ratio. And so in identifying patients, can we increase productivity? Ideally, can we increase lifespan? Without the cost of sort of overburdening the system. And I think, you know, we'll see a lot of work in this field over the next decade. You know, just for full disclosure, The U.S. Preventive Service Task Force actually advised against screening for COPD about 5 to 10 years ago. There's, you know, if you just type U.S. Preventive Service Task Force, JAMA, COPD screening, it goes through the recommendations. And so this is a bit of a contentious issue for the same, for the reason, you know, the task force, when they put these recommendations out, said, you know, even if we identify COPD, does it make a difference to individuals that have COPD? And that really is the crux of the question. And so while we are excited about the results and while we believe that they're important contribution, it is important contribution in the field, more work really needs to be done to make sure that they benefit the end user, which are individuals in these settings with the disease.
Thank you again to Dr. Siddhartan for coming on the program. If you want more pulmonology news, make sure to follow HCP Live on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And tune in this Thursday for a new episode of Doc Talk. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy.